The Gospel by Luke and chapter 5 and reading from verse 27. And after these things he went forth and saw a publican named Levi sitting at the receipt of custom, and he said unto him, Follow me. And he left all, rose up, and followed him. And Levi made a great feast in his own house, and there was a great company of publicans and of others that sat down with them. Chapter 7, please. Chapter 7. Chapter 7, and reading at verse 6. Then Jesus went forth with them, and when he was not far from the house, the centurion sent friends to him, saying unto him, Lord, trouble not thyself, for I am not worthy that thou shouldst enter under my roof. Wherefore neither thought I myself worthy to come unto thee, but say in a word, and my servant shall be healed. For I am also a man set under authority, having under me soldiers, and I say to one, Go, and he goeth, and to another, Come, and he cometh. Come, and he cometh, and to my servant, Do this, and he doeth it. When Jesus heard these things, he marveled at him, and turned him about, and said unto the people that followed him, I say unto you, I have not found so great faith, no, not in Israel. Could we go on in the same chapter into about verse 36? Verse 36 of the same chapter. And one of the Pharisees desired him that he should eat with him. And he went into the Pharisee's house, and he sat down to meat. And behold, a woman in the city, which was a sinner, when she saw that Jesus sat at meat in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster box of ointment, and stood at his feet behind him weeping, and began to wash his feet with tears, and did wipe them with the hairs of her head, and kissed his feet, and anointed them with the ointment. Now when the Pharisee which had bidden him saw it, he spake within himself, saying, This man, if he were a prophet, would have known who, and what manner of woman this is that toucheth him, for she is a sinner. And Jesus answering said unto him, Simon, I have somewhat to say unto thee. He saith, Master, say on. There was a certain creditor which had two debtors. Verse 44. And he turned to the woman and said unto him, and he turned to the woman and said unto Simon, Seest thou this woman? I entered into thine house, and thou gavest me no water for my feet, but she hath washed my feet with tears, and wiped them with the hairs of her head. Thou gavest me no kiss, but this woman, since the time that I came, hath not ceased to rain tears upon my feet. My head with oil thou didst not anoint, but this woman hath anointed my feet with ointment. Wherefore I say unto you, her sins, which are many, are forgiven, for she loved much. But to whom little is forgiven, the same loveth little. And he said unto her, Thy sins are forgiven thee. Now chapter 8, please, and verse 41. Chapter 8 and verse 41. And behold, there came a man named Jairus, and he was a ruler of the synagogue, and he fell down at Jesus' feet and besought him that he would come into his house. For he had one only daughter, about 12 years of age, and she lay a dying. But as he went And as he went, the people thronged him. And the woman, having an issue of blood 12 years, which had spent all her living upon physicians, neither could be healed of any, came behind him and touched the border of his garment. And immediately her issue of blood staunched. Jesus said, "Who touched me?" And so on. Verse 47, And when the woman saw that she could not be hid, she came trembling and falling down before him. And she declared unto him, before all the people, for what cause she had touched him, and how she was healed immediately. And he said unto her, "Daughter, be of good comfort, thy faith hath made thee whole, go in peace." And while he yet spake, there cometh one from the ruler of the synagogue's house, saying to him, "Thy daughter is dead, trouble not the master." But when Jesus heard that, he answered him, saying, "Fear not, believe only, and she shall be made whole." And when he came into the house, he suffered no man to go in, save Peter and James and John, and the father and the mother of the maiden. And all wept and bewailed her, but he said, "Weep not, she is not dead, but sleepeth." And they laughed him to scorn, knowing that she was dead. And he put them all out, and took her by the hand, and called, saying, "Made her eyes," and her spirit came again. And she arose straightway, and he commanded to give her meat, and her parents were astonished, but he charged them that they should tell no man what was done. May the Lord bless the reading of his precious word to all our souls. Now, for those who were not with us, we're looking through what we would call the 12 salient houses in the Gospel according to Luke. And we have seen that Luke is a very proficient man, and Luke is a man who traveled through all the houses and would see the people in their best and in their worst days and in all the many moods that mankind are found in through their life. Now, we have come this evening, after having dealt with the priest's house and seeing Elizabeth and Mary, and I hope you haven't forgotten that, of the beautiful spiritual house that we saw in the hill country, to which Mary came with haste and stayed 3 months in that spiritual element. That was a beautiful house indeed. Then we saw the 2 pictures in 2 different days of Simon Peter's house. We saw the restoration of the lady in middle age. We saw how that she was unconscious of her condition and how the Lord beautifully restored her with his loving touch and word. And then we saw united faith last evening in Peter's house again, and how the roof was taken down and maybe even some dirt fell upon some of the dignitaries' heads in that house. But still, they got the man to Christ, and that was the great point in that particular house. Now, tonight we're going to look at a different house altogether. It is the house of Levi. Other gospelers call him Matthew. Others call him Matthew the publican. In fact, when Matthew is speaking about himself, he always calls himself Matthew the publican. We would say that Levi was his Sunday name. I don't know if you would talk that way here, but we would talk about his Sunday name. Well, Levi was his Sunday name. But when he is talking about himself years after, he always says, "I was Matthew the publican." He never forgot the seat that he sat in. He never forgot the rock from whence he was hewn. He never forgot the pit from whence he was digged. And Matthew is a most remarkable person indeed. I thought that Matthew was like the deserted infant of Ezekiel chapter 16. You remember when God is reminding Israel about their lowly derivations. He says, "Thy father was an Ammonite, and thy mother was a Hittite in the day that thou was born." He says, "Thou wast not washed or swaddled or salted at all. No, I pitied thee, no one washed thee, until I passed by." Listen to these words. "And Jesus passed by, and he saw, sitting at the receipt of custom, Levi." You see, as I passed by, it wasn't Matthew's look at him. It was Christ's look at Matthew. If you favor
that Matthew knew Christ before this call, I wouldn't fight with you. I think there is something behind that. But I want to teach something here before we come into the house. Matthew is sitting at the receipt of custom. His fingers are on the very money. He's ringing up the till.
He's there.
And you'll find that what he was before, the characteristics of him come out again. You'll see him with all his money at the end of the day counting it up. You'll see him in Matthew 1. 14 generations. And it's in Matthew. He doesn't forget about the sovereign call of God. In his genealogy, he sees Rahab, he sees Tamar, he sees Ruth, he sees Bathsheba. And he can understand why. Because God saw them and included them in the glorious, mighty genealogy of Christ. And God called Matthew as well. Maybe I should just speak a little word about those who have these notions and ambitions to go preaching. My dear young friend, I want to say this. Please don't be a burden and a nuisance to the elders in the assembly. I want you to see that it was Christ that called this man. He may have been a useful man, but Christ had him in his mind. And by the way, the gifts that are given to the church are endowments from the risen Christ, Ephesians. He gave some apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors and teachers. Now when he gives a gift, there'll not be any squabbling and fighting and wondering whether there should be letters of commendation or not. It will be a foregone conclusion that Christ has given a man a gift. And every man in the work of God should have a measure of competence to relay the gospel to sinners and to be able to instruct and communicate the mind of God to saints. I'm not saying one will have a better gift than the other and the measure in which it develops. But in the Gospel by Matthew chapter 28, the most quoted verse in these parts, it says you'll go into all the world and preach the gospel, baptizing and teaching and commanding. These are all the qualifications of those that go to the work of the Lord. So we should have no difficulty and no fighting at all, because gifts are endowments from the risen Christ. I hope you take that, my dear friends. I know you're not, and I know nothing about you. I only want you to understand that it's not a matter of getting so such in one's favor, or family favor, or assembly favor. Listen to this. It was well reported among the brethren in Derbe, Lystra, and Iconium that Timothy was marked out as a man for the work of God. My dear friend, as he passed by, he saw a Levi sitting at the receipt of custom. Luke tells us that Levi held a great feast in his house. You know, when Matthew's telling this story, he doesn't tell about that it was his house. Matthew says, and when he was in the house, he doesn't say it was my house. He doesn't say it was my feast. He doesn't say it was my farewell. He doesn't talk like that at all. It's Luke that says he held a great feast in his house. I wonder why he held a great feast. Well, you see, my friend, he was a publican. And publican of all that yawn sort of fox-like, ferret-like eyes. Do you know what I mean? They're not men that would nearly skin a loose for its tally. Do you understand? They would nearly take every penny they could get out of everyone. And he realized this, that no amount of talking and no amount of preaching and no amount of saying about my call, my call, my call. He held a feast in his house. And the wisdom of this man, he said, I'll let them see him for themselves. I'll let them hear his wisdom for themselves. I'll let them sit there and look at him for themselves, and then I'll not have too much to say.
that says he held a great feast in his house. I don't know what it cost them, but I'll tell you this, it was all worthwhile.
I believe there was a little man in that house that day. You might differ with me. I believe that Zacchaeus was there that day. And suppose it cost them $500,000. It was just worth it to catch that son of Abraham. You can see them, can't you, sitting all those tax men? Can't you? You know you're dead scared of them when you go and see them, don't you? Oh, their eyes. And they're out for everything that you think you've worked for. Oh, their eyes.
They were as grisly as proud as Alabama's apologies.
That day in that house. Oh, in that house, I tell you. There was a man that wasn't there to take anything from anybody. There was a man that never, never took away from anyone anything at all. In fact, he restored that which he took not away. There's something beautiful about that. This is the day that Matthew will never have another feast. Oh, he's going to hold a party. And someone says, try and make your ministry, you know, for the young people and for the modern day. This is a day of teas and getting people together for any old reason at all.
Well, I'm going to give you liberty and license for a party. If you would love to introduce people like the publicans and sinners to the blessed Lord Jesus Christ, we could all concur with your party. But you know it's not like that, don't you? You know it's your friends. And you know it's the type of people you'd like to have about, you'd like to have. Here's a man that held a great feast in his house. At his own personal expense, there's something very beautiful about that. You know there's people in the meeting, and they don't mind the expense as long as it's at the meeting's expense. And some of their suggestions are so wild, but if it affected them personally, it would be a shocking thing. But he held a great feast in his house. There was nothing too expensive. There was nothing too great for Christ. Oh, my friend, there's not many of these houses, is there? He held a great feast in his house. I think it was Dean Farrar. I don't tell you to read him, but he wrote a book on the life of Christ. And he says, sitting together in Matthew's house was flagrant guilt and flawless innocence. Although we can never talk about innocence in relation to Christ. There's a difference between innocence and sinlessness. Adam was innocent, but he wasn't. Christ is absolutely sinless. But you know the point the man is making. Sitting amongst flagrant guilt is flawless innocence. Oh, the beauty of Christ in that house. Let us come to another one, which I think is one of the most interesting of all the houses in the Gospel by Luke, the house that he never entered into. You know, the centurion, he has a servant. This isn't John's Gospel, where the nobleman has a son. That's a different teaching altogether. This is a centurion that has a servant. I'm sure that most of you know this, that under the Roman yoke, at that time, there would be something like 125 million people that were slaves to the Roman yoke. And this man could get a servant or a slave at any time. But here he is, and he's in deep concern about his feverish or his sick servant. There's something lovely about this man. Let us go down and see something about him. You know, we must concur as we read the Bible, and it's good to be fair to everybody. I don't know if you do that in the Gospel when you're preaching to people. Do you just stand and thunder that everyone's iniquitous and abominable and objectionable? Is that what you do? Well, you're wrong. All men are sinners, but all men are not sinners alike. All men are of the seed of Adam,
But every man is not a fornicator. Every man is not idolatrous. Every man is not a drunkard. Every man is not an extortioner. All men are sinners. But all men are not sinners.
I like just a little bit of discretion in your preaching.
Don't classify everyone the same. They are all sinners and they all need to be saved.
But all men are not sinners. I like.
And the elders of the Jews come. And they say to the Lord, come and heal his servant, for he is worthy. He is worthy that thou shouldst do this for him.
And notice the awful
sneakiness of the Jews. They hate the tax gatherers, those that keep from them. But they love them that give to them. He has built us a hall. He has built us a meeting house. A synagogue, that's what a synagogue means. Maybe it would have been better if we'd just called our places meeting houses instead of getting into all the trouble we've got into. He has built us a synagogue.
And he loveth our nation.
He loveth our nation. He's patriotic to us. He has built us a synagogue. He's philanthropic. He's always giving in for us. He's worthy. He's worthy. He's worthy. You can hear it, can't you? He's worthy.
I wish we could get more people saying we are worthy. Ah, but when the man comes, he doesn't care what the Jews say.
He doesn't care what he's given. He doesn't care what his leanings are.
He says, Lord, I am not worthy that thou shouldst come under my roof. Oh, I want to preach. I want to preach for the future of the Lord being our come.
I want to tell you this. Young person, elder, preacher, evangelist, teachers, I want to tell you that you'll become a spiritual nonentity unless this is engraved by God in your heart. That you are not worthy. It takes the swagger out of your step. It takes the presumption out of your press. It takes the hardness out of your preaching.
I want to tell you, it's the greatest first rung in the ladder to spiritual success.
It's when you believe about yourself that you are not fit for the presence and company and fellowship with Christ. There's two things this man knew that few Christians arrive at in the whole of their life. And that's including everyone in here. There's some brethren preach and say, this audience is exempted from this ministry. But this audience is not exempted from what I want to say to you. Two things if you mean to make progress and bring pleasure to the face of Christ and make him take you and turn you around before all the audience and face him. It's this, that you learn who you are.
I am not God.
And you learn who he is.
He says, Lord, you don't even need to come to my house.
I know you don't need to lift my servant by the hand. I know you don't need to lean over him. I actually know who you are.
Two things. Just two.
Not too many. Just two things. This isn't 10 commandments. This isn't a whole host and list of regulations.
Two things if you want to be spiritual. They'll deliver you from pride. They'll deliver you from 1,000 faults. They'll deliver you from your hereditary problems. It'll deliver you from weakness and weights and the sin that doth so easily beset you. If you understand who you are,
irrespective of what others say you are, learn who you are.
I am not worthy. He says, Lord, just speak the word. He says, I'm a man under authority.
I say go and he goeth, come and he cometh. He says, I actually know who you are, Lord. I know who you are.
The regulation of Christian life is dependent on two things.
is dependent on you knowing who you are and knowing who he is. I hope you get that point, because if you miss it, you're going to be nuisance value to us for years. Learn it. Take it that you're not worthy to be saved. You're not worthy to be in the assembly. There's people today, and they're coming amongst us, and they think that the assembly owes them something. The assembly owes you nothing. You owe the assembly everything. And there's another group of people, and they think that we've just been waiting on them being born to come and give us a new idea. Oh, my friend, I tell you this. With all the education, and all the millions that have been put into it, we're expecting massive, great creativity. And what do we get? Punks and drunks and drug addicts. Look at you, dear young Christian. You've had people praying for you, you'll never have another kind of people like them. And we'll be watching and waiting and longing and crying that there would be raised up amongst us people that love the Lord, love His Word, love the truth, love the assembly, love the elders, love the ways of God. And what do we get? We meetings here, and little schisms here, and little things here, and little splinters here. I tell you this, you're on the road to spiritual ruin. I do say to you, my friend, if you got these 2 points straight, you would save yourself and save us and save God this pleasure if you would only come to this house and learn. He says, I am not worthy that thou should enter into my house under my roof. You do understand, don't you, without me telling you, that there wouldn't be a house in Galilee, a better house, and a bigger house, and maybe a better ordered house. But he says, I'm not even worthy that you should grace my house with your presence. I hope you think that about your house. I hope you think that about your family. I was sitting at home one Sunday night. A man said, I'd like a little word with you. I always go kind of shaky when they say that to me. Wonder what it is. You come and say, well, there's that problem in the house. And I just said to my wife and my girls, my boys, whatever you do, suppose you've gone into the kitchen, but don't worry. Oh, my hearts. I looked at the man going about it. Well, I really should have done it. Don't be thinking I'm a sort of father contented. I don't blame for that. Another man came. Man's heels were hardly out the door. And this is what he said. Well, if something happened, whatever happened, I'm not going to have my family trodden down. I'm not going to have my family. I don't care how, what length it goes to. I don't care if it goes right into the meeting. I see you sit down. One man says, spare the assembly, spare the people, spare the flock. The other man doesn't care. What kind of house have you got? Do you feel that it was great that Christ ever looked upon you even with one side glance? Or do you think that God didn't get it having you? May God help us to come through this house. He knew himself, and he knew who Christ was. As I passed by that house, I loved what he did. He turned the man around, just the same way he did the little child in the Gospels. You remember? He turned the big centurion down. This is the man with a pick-up. You know how we like the braids, you know? A man in a uniform is always a different man from a man in a suit. A uniform makes a big change to a man. Skip hat and things like that. You know, he turned him down in front of all the crowd. So did his word. I have not seen so great a faith. No, not. He had looked for faith in Israel, but he didn't get it. He looked for faith in Israel, he didn't get it. He looks for faith in Israel, and he gets it up on the course of Tyre and Sidon. Up among the cursed people. Up among the border people. Up among the heathen people, the Syrophoenicians, the old people of the land. He saw faith there. He's looking for it in Peter and doesn't get it. He says, "O ye of little faith, wherefore didst thou doubt?" You would think Peter would have faith. He's the top man at the conference. You would think he would have it, but he doesn't. And you wouldn't think a poor woman, maybe just a single parent family. But my, she's crying for the crumbs and the tears of the town as far as the door. And she might get the blessing of Almighty God.
Oh, don't let us come through that house too quick.
The house he didn't visit. Because those 2 points will determine the kind of person that you're going to turn out to be.
Let us go in then to the Pharisee's house, or what we would call Jesus in the loveless house. We did say yesterday that a loveless person is not good company for anyone. A loveless marriage is something that's very sad to behold. A loveless home is something dreadful to live in. A loveless assembly is something that hardly bears description from this public platform. But you know, these are things that could all be established in the Word of God. I've often wondered why the Pharisee invited Jesus into the house. I would not want to question his motive because 1 Corinthians 4 says you've no right to question anybody's motive. Judge nothing before the time till the Lord come. You have to judge people's morals. You have to judge their behavior. But you're not allowed to judge a person's motives. But when we come here, you know, the Lord refused no man's invitation. The Lord refused no man's invitation. He's invited to Bethany. He'll go to Bethany. He's invited to the Pharisee's house. And he goes. We'll see the man's heart just as the point goes on. As he's in the house, there is a strange intrusion. There's a strange intrusion. And there comes into the house a most unwanted person. And just sad it is to see this.
That the annoyance that this person caused to the man
is no annoyance to Christ at all. You know, sometimes what's an annoyance to us was not an annoyance to Christ. You know, what's an annoyance to us was sheer pleasure and happiness to Christ.
Oh, what an intrusion. What an intrusion.
Let us see just what happens here. I love this lady. I love her posture. Taking her place at his feet. That's lovely. She's not coming in and talking and talking and talking. She's coming in and she's taking her place at the feet of Christ. It's lovely, really, what she does. I'm going to go down through it. Don't get all embarrassed and don't put your head down because we're going through it. Notice, she stood behind. Oh, this isn't the pushy type, is it? This isn't the wanting meeting type, is it? She stood behind. Oh, just, I only wish I could teach this to every man and woman, every preacher, every teacher. The great thing in life is just to know where to stand. To know just your place. To know just where to be for his pleasure. Not forward, not pushy, not arrogant. You're not needing to be like that at all. If you're spiritual, you've no fears. If you've got ability, you'll come to the front. The great thing in life is just to know just where to stand, just where to be. He's waiting. He's going to bless her. He's going to speak about her. But she seems to know her place. She's standing behind him. You know, there was no self-assertiveness in this lady. Oh, you see, she was a sinner, a woman of the city. And that's what she had to be. To fly a train. She had to be self-assertive. She had to be bold. She had to be strong. But you know, this woman has been affected by Christ.
and a mighty change
has been wrought in this woman.
May I say this to you, my dear friend, with all the kindness of my heart? There's a kind of gospel going about today, and I'll tell you what it's saying. Just get them saved, and just get them to possess. Do you know this? It is my thorough conviction that I will go home in the next grave,
that the grace of God can change the hardest heart, the heartless heart, the hating heart.
The grace of God can change. We say we'll give them time and give them another little bit of time.
And a man and woman is saved. Oh, we have to be tender and kind and watchful.
But he's a new creation. And there's power and there's energy from heaven to change even immediately the man that comes and trusts in him. You know, when I see her standing weeping, I would love to see her face. I don't know what like her face was before she came to the light. But if there was anything that she had to have it or get it down, you could just imagine what she had. But now she's got it on her face something else. Tears of comfort. Tears and weeping.